Finance and Economics.
Buttonwood, The Grand Illusion. How efficient market theory has been proved both wrong and right.
The past 10 years have dealt a series of blows to efficient market theory, the idea that asset prices accurately reflect all available information. In the late 1990s, dot-com companies with no profits and barely any earnings were valued in billions of dollars. And in 2006, investors massively underestimated the risks in bundling together portfolios of American subprime mortgages. There is now widespread acceptance that investors can behave irrationally, creating very large anomalies. Take the momentum effect, the practice of buying the stock market's best performers over the previous time period. A study by the London Business School found that, since 1900, buying British stocks with the best momentum would have turned £1 into £1.95 million before costs and tax by the end of last year. The same sum invested in the worst performers would have grown to just £31. In efficient markets, such an anomaly should be arbitraged away. Belief in efficient market theory made the authorities reluctant to restrain either the dot-com or the housing and credit bubbles. Perversely, the result has been much greater state interference in the markets than was dreamed of 10 years ago, with commercial banks being nationalized or subsidized, and central banks acting as a buyer of last resort for financial assets. But it is important not to throw out all the insights of efficient market enthusiasts. Although it is theoretically possible to make money by outperforming the markets, it is extremely difficult in practice. That ought to have made investors suspicious of the smoothness of the returns of Bernard Madoff, who's been accused of a vast fraud. His strategy, as advertised, might have produced less volatile returns than the index, but the absence of negative months suggested almost perfect market timing. Some fund managers have beaten the markets over long periods. The problem is to identify them in advance. Picking them after they have outperformed may be too late, as those who backed Legg Mason's Bill Miller have recently discovered. Why is this? Fund managers are human too and subject to behavioral biases. In addition, the larger their funds become, as their reputation spreads, the more difficult it is to outperform. The temptation has also been to assume that fees are positively correlated with performance, that if mutual fund managers charging 1.5% are good, hedge fund managers charging 2% and 20% of performance are even better. Because investors cannot beat the market in aggregate, all this means is that money is transferred from investors to fund managers. Even David Swensen, the man who led the drive into alternative assets at Yale University, thinks most investors should rely on low-cost index tracking funds. But perhaps the area where the efficient market hypothesis should have had greater weight is at banks. Many lament the demise of old-style banking, the 3-6-3 model, where bankers borrowed money at 3%, lent it at 6%, and were on the golf course at 3 p.m. That model broke down because markets were fairly efficient, the margins on lending to corporations became too low. So banks were attracted to the higher-margin business of investment banking. Commercial banks could use their capital to back up their advisory operations and outmuscle old-style investment banks. The latter duly abandoned the partnership structure and raised money on the stock market, or were bought by commercial banks. The same logic required new trading desks to handle the bank's positions, and those desks quickly became profit centers of their own. But how were those trading desks making money? Perhaps they were exploiting information gathered by the rest of the group, a tactic that, if not illegal, put them in conflict with their clients. Or they were taking advantage of an artificially low cost of capital. With commercial banks, that cost was low because of the implicit public subsidy provided by deposit guarantees. Without such guarantees, savers would have wanted higher interest rates from banks with trading arms to reflect the risk of a market-related loss. In the good years, when they randomly beat the market, the traders earned bonuses. In the bad years, the taxpayers have picked up the bill. And that raises a fundamental question. If regulators thought markets were too efficient to interfere with, how come they allowed banks to get involved in an activity which, after bonuses, was a game they collectively could not win?